America Weekend.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge. Okay, what is your favorite movie of all time? What's your least favorite movie of all time? I have a few for both categories, but did you know there is a list out right now of classic movies that people just hate? And when you hear some of the titles, you think, wait a minute, aren't these some of the most revered films of all time? Well, it turns out not. Here we go. Films that everyone supposedly loved, but it turns out a lot of people hate. The first one is Bonnie and Clyde. While on its surface, Bonnie and Clyde is a sexy crime story about a couple who were bent on living fast and dying young together, the final product is slow-moving and the characters are unsympathetic. Well, because they were bank robbers that shot people in the back. Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway make for a gorgeous couple as Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker, except the movie hardly gives us any sex. Well, first of all, it was 1967, and until Midnight Cowboy came along about a year later, you didn't really see a lot of you-know-what on the screen. You know something? Whenever I see Faye Dunaway, what do you think about when you see Faye Dunaway? No wire hangers. I think of her as Joan Crawford in 1982. She was great in that movie. Whenever I see her and I hear that voice, even in, what was that, 1976? Network. Even in Network. To me, that's Joan Crawford. And watch out, because she found out that you put a wire hanger in your shirt and she's going to have you scrubbing the bathroom floor with Comet all night long. Anyway, Dunaway opens the movie, Bonnie and Clyde, with a masterful nude scene that reveals the character's boredom, frustration, and restlessness so that we understand why she takes up with Clyde without having to speak a single line. While the two characters are in love, they seem so disconnected from everything around them except each other that it's difficult to read them. I think it's a good movie. I think it's a little long. It kind of runs, some of the scenes drag. Gene Hackman is in that movie, a very early role for him, and he does, a terrific job in the movie. The final product is a beautiful piece of cinema, but it can leave viewers feeling confused about what they're supposed to take from Bonnie and Clyde's story. You know what the big scene is at the end. Of course, the authorities are waiting in the weeds. Warren Beatty comes out of the convenience store. They spot somebody there that they know is a police officer or something, and she gives him one last loving look, and then the bullets fly, and about a minute and a half later, that kind of takes care of them. The next one, these are classic movies that it turns out people hate, The Deer Hunter. The 1978 Vietnam War film The Deer Hunter has received high acclaim for excellent performances from Robert De Niro, Meryl Streep, and Christopher Walken, but has also been criticized for its one-sided vision of the North Vietnamese as blood-crazed killers. The film is a three-hour-long, violence-filled meditation on war, with the central metaphor being the game of Russian roulette. It's a very uneasy and a very creepy movie. Those scenes get me every time. War journalists scorned that metaphor because there was not a single case ever in the entire Vietnam War ever found about the Viet Cong forcing American prisoners to play Russian roulette, as is portrayed in the movie. We don't know that it didn't exist, though, did we not? In an article about Hollywood's treatment of the Vietnam War, Vanity Fair discusses the backlash to the film from people who actually experienced the war firsthand. Los Angeles Times Pulitzer Prize-winning war journalist Peter Arnett wrote, "In its 20 years of war, there was not a single recorded case of Russian roulette. The central metaphor of the movie is simply a bloody lie." Well, do we know everything that happened in Vietnam? Really? Do you think there would be a catalog of every awful atrocity that took place over there? Since when do we make journals of everything that happened in war so we can catalog it later on? The New York Times published an opinion piece from war journalist John Pilger, who said Hollywood sensed that a lot of money could be made from a movie that appealed directly to those racial instincts that cause wars and that allowed the Vietnam War to endure for so long. The Deer Hunter and its apologists insult the memory of every American who died in Vietnam, unquote. Despite the backlash, The Deer Hunter is still considered to be one of the top greatest films of all time, showing legendary actors De Niro, Streep, and Walken at the top of their games. And I think one of the reasons why there was the backlash was, up until that point, for the most part, war movies, I don't want to say they glorified war, glorified the battle, but it was a very sanitized version of what really happened. Think about some of the John Wayne type war movies, even some of the ones I like, The Dirty Dozen, Kelly's Heroes from the late 60s. A guy got shot. All he did was just grab his chest and fall down. You never saw blood. Think about how the war movie evolved as time went on. The Deer Hunter in 78. Let's go 10 years after that. Oliver Stone in Platoon. I remember going with my father to see Platoon, and my father was really taken aback. Oh, this is terrible. Why are they showing this? Because it showed them smoking marijuana. It showed them actually committing atrocities as they were in villages. It was a very gritty, real depiction of what happened. And sometimes people don't want to see that on the screen. And when The Deer Hunter sort of crossed that bridge and entered the genre of really trying to depict the atrocities of war and not glorifying it on a screen, it changed people's feelings as to what a war movie should be. Think about Saving Private Ryan. Did you ever see the first 20 minutes of that movie? Don't do it on a full stomach. Next, Lawrence of Arabia. Lawrence of Arabia, a four-hour sweeping epic, which for some people puts it on a must-watch list, while others squirm at the thought of spending that much time concentrating on a difficult plot and viewing sweeping scenes of the desert landscape. The film has also been questioned for not representing people of Middle Eastern descent in casting, but this is a common issue for films made in the early 1960s. That is very true. You look at some of the older films, pre-1965. Racially, they're not accurate. Let's see. New York Times critic Bolly Crowther criticized the movie for not portraying Lawrence's humanity enough and focusing too much on the scenery, which he did admit is breathtaking. Experts on the life of British Army officer T.E. Lawrence say that the movie takes liberties with his life, which partially came from Lawrence's own exaggerations in his autobiography, Seven Pillars of Wisdom. Again, these are classic movies that it turns out people hate. 2001 A Space Odyssey. 2001 A Space Odyssey is widely considered to be one of the most important films of all time and perhaps the visionary director Stanley Kubrick's greatest achievement. The movie is visually impressive and hugely imaginative, but it's also a long and rather arduous undertaking to watch, an incredibly long scene in which a spaceship docks is one complaint from viewers about the film. Another is the stilted dialogue and the lack of emotion the audience feels towards the characters, in particular Poole, whose death elicits little emotion from viewers. While it is considered by the American Film Institute to be one of the greatest science fiction movies of all time, perhaps the best, it was not a crowd pleaser when it was released and likely never will be. Here's one where you really have to be a film buff to have even seen this. Birth of a Nation. D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation is one of the most controversial films in cinema history. The 1915 silent movie is credited with being one of the most groundbreaking films of all time, inventing standard film techniques like close-ups, camera pans, and eyeline matches, as well as pioneering nighttime photography and the use of extras. But the movie is a highly racist depiction of American history that romanticized the Ku Klux Klan and is even credited with starting a revival of the KKK. With Birth, Griffin was single-handedly responsible for codifying the language of cinema and shattering the world's notions of what a film could be. It's according to film critic Eric M. Armstrong, but the filmmaker would never live down the legacy of bigotry and racism left by the movie. The next one is Ben-Hur. This 1959 three-hour biblical epic starring Charlton Heston broke records for biggest budget, biggest sets, box office gross, and most Oscar wins when it premiered in 1959, but many today consider the film to be too uneven and too boring. A famous chariot race scene halfway through the film is cited as one of the greatest action sequences ever filmed, but the rest of the film suffers from mediocre, preachy writing, and all that spectacle wears itself out quickly. Film critic Gary Giddens wrote in the old New York Sun, quote, "Watching Ben-Hur all at once is like sitting down to a 10-course meal and finding that every course consists of potato dumplings, except for the seventh, which is strawberry shortcake. That would be the chariot race," unquote. I remember there's a scene from The Sopranos, and the character Ralph Cifaretto is watching Ben-Hur, and he gets all upset because he points out that they all have these flat tops, the Roger Maris haircuts of 1961. It's true. They didn't have the buzz-cut box-top things back in Roman ages. Good point, Ralphie. And the final one, Citizen Kane. Given that Orson Welles' Kane is drooled over by movie lovers and critics and has been repeatedly ranked as the greatest movie of all time by a variety of sources, it's a movie that any film buff would want to share. Unfortunately, those less appreciative of the art of film and simply looking for an entertaining movie to watch will likely not be so impressed. Citizen Kane is long, moves slowly, and tells the story of greedy newspaper owner William Randolph Hearst, a man who isn't exactly a very familiar part of our country's history. Film buffs can point out the groundbreaking camera work and Welles' superb performance as Charles Foster Kane, but this is a movie that goes over the heads of many a casual viewer. Rosebud. Have you ever seen the movie? I would imagine most people haven't, for what's considered the greatest film of all time, if I remember correctly, from 1941. Do you love any of the movies on this list? One thing that's interesting, as generations move along, these films will start to fade away anyway, so you've got to be of a certain age to, I think, even have any sort of an appreciation for some of these films. I'm Ed Kalenge, and this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network. America
Weekend! Welcome to American Biker Minute. ABM owns bikes with both the carburetor and fuel injection gas delivery system. Which is less likely to break? What system is easier to fix? Today on American Biker Minute.
Do you have troubled skin or acne? With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Call Proactive Plus now and receive a 60-day risk-free trial along with two free extras and free shipping. Call 800-393-6139. That's 1-800-393-6139.
Jeff Ryan for American Biker Minute. Modern bikes come with a fuel pump to feed injectors via a computerized mapping module. Carbureted bikes require nothing more than a gravity feed to get the gas to the right size jets. Both fall victim to ethanol with rubber cracking and gummed up lines. Should the injected bike's tank fuel pump fail, there's no way to fix it along the highway. When a battery-deprived carbureted bike won't start, hit it rolling and pop the clutch. On an injected bike, hook up a charger or call for a tow. Injection? Vastly more complicated. Your passport to the open road on two wheels.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
This sharpshooter notched more than 50 goals in six consecutive seasons, and he's still the Montreal Canadiens' all-time leading scorer.
Lemaire to Leclerc in the big zone. Leclerc in the slot. Shoot, score!
So, where is Guy Lafleur now? After retiring, the Flower was enshrined in the Hall of Fame and was named one of the Canadiens' special ambassadors. But it was his second career that took off. Literally. He earned his helicopter license and has since flown VIPs in and out of Montreal's busy airport. Guy also operates a pair of restaurants outside of Montreal, but well within reach of a helicopter. Guy Lafleur, flying high in his second career. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Tired of high cable bills? Disable the cable with MyTV. Call 888-759-MYTV. Get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. With packages as low as $19.99 for four rooms, you can't go wrong. Call now, 888-759-MYTV.